Hello again. Welcome to another episode of your favorite podcast, F This Movie.
It's my favorite podcast.
The podcast that is tolerated worldwide. Joining me tonight again.
Yeah, worldwide because we're in the U.S. and also India.
Yeah.
Thanks, Prashant, or Prescient, or another way to say his name.
I am Patrick. Joining me again tonight is a very handsome man. Oh. Sorry, ladies. He's engaged. Douglas.
Engaged to be your co-host tonight on the podcast.
Did I say engaged? I meant engaging. He's very engaging.
And I'm married to this concept of podcasting with you.
So, hi, welcome to F This Movie.
I'm wedding myself right now. Sorry.
You can visit our website at fthismovie.blogspot.com. You can email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com.
What's that email address again, Patrick?
fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Mm-hmm. We've been getting some very some nice emails from people,
That's great.
I appreciate that. And people are suggesting movies that they would like to hear us talk about in the future.
Can people only email you movie information or movie stuff, or can they email you anything? Could they say, like, hey.
They can email links to cheap Viagra, or boner pills.
Or Coos crazed college co-eds sharing their sniz.
I prefer they don't.
Oh, yeah.
The Viagra is okay.
And the boner pills are fine, but the Coos crazed college co-eds sharing their sniz is not acceptable.
Crossing a line.
Could they email us, for example, I was thinking about this earlier,
That
TV show from the 80s, Small Wonder.
Yeah.
The girl on the show's name is Vicky.
Right.
V-I-C-I.
Right.
I don't remember what the acronym, what it stands for.
We could probably easily look it up on
Google anything anymore.
We could look it up on Wikipedia.
Wikipedia? I refuse to bing anything. I refuse to Google anything. So they could email
Does
us
Does your
the
wife
answer.
Know that you refuse to bing anything?
Oh, zoinks!
He's married. Sorry, ladies. He's engaged. I quit.
Oh, let me do another line from that movie.
Okay, that'll be fun. Tonight's episode, we're going to do lines from that thing you do. Douglas, have you seen anything good lately?
I have. I just watched an episode of Chuck because I was waiting for the podcast to start.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never seen an episode of Chuck.
Yeah. Now you have.
Now I have. So I've seen that.
There's no going back.
I think that your question should be rephrased because you just asked me,
have you seen anything lately?
Yeah. I have not seen anything good lately.
Yeah.
I've seen a couple things, not much in the theater because it's the doldrums, the late summer horrible heap of garbage movies. And there's nothing really out in the theaters.
Until this weekend.
At Piranha 3D, as you indicated before, is the end of summer, and the summer is officially over.
There's like a 2 to 3 week drought until The Town comes out this weekend.
Unless you are a big Takers fan, in which case, I salute you. I salute your shorts. Hey, dude. So I've seen a couple things. I've DVR'd some stuff on HBO and whatnot, and I saw Gran Torino.
Ooh.
It is suburbia.
Clint Eastwood.
Peel back the curtain. I'm kidding. So I saw Gran Torino. And I saw The Informant.
Yes.
And I saw probably the cherry on top of this movie shit pile. I saw Open Water 2, Adrift.
Interesting.
Very interesting because, of course, Gran Torino, I'm like, all right, you know, I didn't see the movie when it came out. I missed it.
Mm-hmm.
I missed that phenomenon.
Did you miss it or did you avoid it?
I think I missed it. Obviously, Clint Eastwood's a talented director and he's a great actor.
He made Space Cowboys.
I forgot
about
that.
He's an Oscar-nominated actor. Did he get nominated for Gran Torino?
Did he never win an Oscar?
I feel like he did. Oh, no. Well, not for acting. He's won Oscars for directing.
Okay, so, but not for acting.
No, not for acting.
So, obviously, Clint Eastwood
should have won for The Rookie.
A good director and a decent actor in his day. I found Gran Torino not very good.
No.
And you know, I don't know, you had some interesting comments about Gran Torino, too. What I'll say about Gran Torino...
I'm not a fan.
...is that
comments over.
I had you know, higher expectations, obviously, based on the director and how, when it came out, people were just like, wow, this movie's so good. It was up for some Oscars and blah, blah, blah. It is a cartoon. It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's stereotypes. He is growling in the entire movie. And not even, I mean, ironically, it just is a kind of a mess. And I watched half of it. And my wife was gone, and she came home and saw the other half. But she wasn't watching it with me. She was making dinner, and she was doing some other stuff in and out. And she is... like laughing and questioning why I'm watching. She didn't know what I was watching. She's like, what are you watching? This sounds horrible. And I'm like, well, funny enough,
Gran Torino.
It's Gran Torino.
Yeah.
And then I saw The Informant, which is pretty good.
I liked that movie.
I love the feel of it and the music and how it's shot, and it's good. It makes me want to like find out more about the characters and whatnot. And Open Water 2 Adrift is a movie... that I cannot...
Say no more.
Exactly.
Open Water 2 Adrift is a movie.
I disagree. It's a great concept.
It's a way of life.
It's these
religion.
Six friends are on a yacht, a luxury yacht, and they all jump in the water. And someone forgets to lower the ladder.
Monica, so Rachel, Phoebe, Joey, Chandler, and Ross,
and Marcel, the monkey.
How weird that a show jumped the shark in like season two, only to bounce back for eight more seasons.
Which show is this?
Chuck,
thank you. So they jump in the water. They forget to lower the ladder. So now they're just like basically floating on this yacht.
They're adrift.
And it's an interesting concept, which is horribly executed. And I think I watched it like, I'm like, oh, what's this? It's girls in bikinis because I am a pervert. And I watched this for 2 seconds. And then, of course, I get wrapped into things as I did with Chuck today. And, of course, I watched the last half hour. So what I had to do was I had to find it and DVR it.
Oh, my gosh.
I watched
the first
45 minutes because the movie's only like, I think, you know, maybe 70 minutes
long.
The
first open water is crazy short, too.
Right. Which, how do you make it longer? But right. I am interested. I've always been kind of interested in those movies that are very closed and very right. limited in how creative it can be.
Movies that are about how do we get back on our yacht.
I love any movies with luxury yachts. Anything
you know what movie you would love? Boat Trip.
Well, I love boats. And yeah. You know what? Come to think of it, I really love boats. So I think the concept is interesting. The movie is horrible. Eric Dane is not very good, but Susan May Pratt, I think that's her name.
That sounds right.
The ballerina
from your favorite movie,
Center Stage. My favorite movie is Center Stage. Thank you. Email me at fthismovie@podcast@gmail.com, and Patrick will forward it to me.
I will. If you have comments about Center Stage, I will pass them along to Doug. Gladly.
It's a piece of shit movie. I don't know what I was thinking, but I watched it because I get wrapped up in things very easily. But
are
I
we
love
talking
this.
About Open Water 2 again? Or are we talking about Center Stage? That was a serious question.
We're talking about Open Water 2 again. Sorry.
Got it.
Anyway, so I watched it, and I am very interested in these types of movies that are very kind of closed, like that Soderbergh movie in the hotel room, and movies like, is that Soderbergh? Can you cut that if I'm wrong?
Are you talking about the one with Ethan Hawke,
yeah.
It's Richard Linklater.
My God.
I can't think of the name of that
Ethan
movie.
Ethan Hawke, and I think Soderbergh. I don't know why. No, I should
because
think
of
Richard.
The Force. No.
No, I think you should think.
That's Richard Linklater.
Can you please delete all this? Because all right, I am not very smart at movies. I'm not smart at movies, by the way. .com. Anyway, but I'm very interested in these concepts. However, I will say that there's a movie coming out.
Tape. That movie's called Tape. Tape. It was making me nuts. I'm so sorry.
No, it's cool. I like those types of movies. But I will say that I've seen a preview for a Ryan Reynolds movie in which he is in a...
Oh, buried?
In a coffin.
I don't want to say buried.
With a lighter and a cell
it's
phone.
Like buried.
And yeah. I guess it was some phenomenon at Sundance or something.
Yeah, it was.
But I can't imagine it being very good because it's really, I think, the concept of like making something simple and kind of like
right.
having very clear-cut parameters. Almost like, and I'll even make a Richard Linklater, Ethan Hawke jump here to Before Sunrise or Before Sunset. Like, it's a very specific, like, you've got two people walking around a city. Like, right. go, make this right. movie. And I just think that's so interesting. And, of course, Before Sunrise, Before Sunset are great. You should see them if you haven't. And Buried, to me, just looks like, I don't know because I don't think it ever leaves the coffin.
Yeah, I don't know. That was my disappointment the first time I saw Saw. I read the concept that it's about these two guys.
But Saw 4 is so good.
It's amazing.
That's what my niece says.
I saw I thought it was
right
about
before
these
I punched her.
Two guys chained up in a room.
I punched my niece
with like a hacksaw, and it's like you have to saw off your foot to get out. And I thought that was the movie. But the movie leaves the room a lot and goes into a lot of backstory, and that's not what Saw is about.
I like that movie, The Cell, where they dissect the horse.
I do too. And they go into the mind of Vincent D'Onofrio.
The Cell is a movie that came out and I saw it in the theater.
So
I don't remember anything about it.
I saw it the same day I saw The Replacements.
Did I see that with you?
No, I saw it by myself.
We should F The Replacements.
We should, says our fan on Facebook.
Oh, fans on Facebook. How do they reach us on Facebook?
Well, you can find us at facebook.com/fthismovie, right?
Did you create that?
I did, yeah.
Awesome, that's fantastic, because we have enough fans now or people that like us.
Please, we have almost 200 people that like us.
Jeez.
I'd like 300, 400, 500, 600,
even Clay Davis likes us.
Or 800, Jeez. Or 900, or 1,000. 1,000 people. I'd like 1,000 people to like us.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Anyway, what have you seen?
Well, I can't think of anything that I've seen, even though I know I've seen.
Are you really? Like, you've been preparing for this all day, I assume.
Not so much.
No.
I've seen a lot of Chuck. I'm
not guess what
lie.
I've done? I've been an ass of you and me.
I did rent a movie from Blockbuster.
Did you really?
I really did.
Where's a Blockbuster?
There's one nearby that's still open. I went to rent a movie that I had to see for an upcoming podcast.
Okay.
And while I was there, a movie caught my eye called Angel of Death, which is a movie that went like straight to, was made for DVD, was made actually for like the web. It came out in like multiple parts and then they put it together as one movie. The only reason I got it, it's a revenge.
Because of the title. The title sounds, makes it sound awesome.
It's a revenge movie starring Zoe Bell. And
oh,
any movie that Zoe Bell is in, you should see. So I saw it and it's not good, but it is, you know, 80 minutes of watching Zoe Bell, and I just like to watch her on screen.
Can you explain who Zoe Bell is for those who maybe
Zoe
not?
Zoe Bell is a former stunt woman.
She's not.
Well, I guess she still does stunts, yeah, but she does a lot of acting now. She was, of course, herself in the movie Death Proof, part of Grindhouse, a movie we have effed previously on this movie.
I loved effing that movie.
And, you know, we spent a lot of time on that podcast talking about, man, they should really put Grindhouse out on DVD. Oh, why won't they? And then, I don't know, 4 days later, the announcement came that it was coming out on DVD.
So much
this
like our
October.
Our friend from India on Facebook, Prescient. Yeah. We are also Prescient in thinking, you see what I did there?
I did.
We're Prescient in predicting that Grindhouse would be released on Blu-ray.
So I saw Angel of Death, which is Zoe Bell. And
was it good?
No, but I like watching Zoe Bell.
Does
so
she do stunts in it, or is she just like pure acting? Is it like straight acting?
No, I mean, it's a lot of like fighting, and she gets stabbed in the head at one point, but she's okay.
Oh, well, that's good.
She's okay, because she's Zoe Bell. You can't. She's death proof.
She is.
She's Zoe the cat. I hate that line. And I know I've seen other stuff, but not. Oh, I watched a movie called Sugar Hill on Netflix Instant.
Yeah.
It's a blaxploitation movie from the early 70s about a woman. It starts very much the same as Coffee, which is a movie I've gone on and on about how much I love. It's a woman. She's dating a guy who was like murdered by the mob. Only instead of Pam Grier style taking her revenge and shooting motherfuckers up, she goes to see like a voodoo priest, and he raises an army of zombies.
By the way, those are the best kinds of priests.
Yeah. And the zombies exact her revenge for her. But they're not like George Romero rotting zombies. They're like crazy Serpent in the Rainbow voodoo zombies, you know? It's not great. I wanted to like it more.
So Lisa Bonet in this movie or not in this movie?
Not in this movie, but definitely drew some influence for her blood-soaked sex scene in Angel Heart.
Because that's about voodoo and stuff too, right?
Yeah, sure.
Is it not? I don't know.
Her stuff is about voodoo.
There you go. Thank you. I thought
the whole movie
memory from junior high is rearing.
Did you actually watch the movie or just that scene?
I think I tried to watch the whole movie.
That movie's awesome, by the way.
De Niro in that too?
Yeah.
So, there you go.
He plays Louis Cipher. In case that doesn't give anything away for you. For some reason it didn't for me the first time I saw it. Yeah, I'd buy it. Louis Cipher, I get it. What? He has long nails. He has long nails and eats eggs. What's more to get? He looks like Martin Scorsese. What am I missing? There's more to his character.
Well, I can't wait to re-rent it. The Blockbuster that's near your house.
Yes, get it on the way home.
Or Netflix Instant.
Yeah, that's great, by the way.
It
you
is
need
kinda,
to get on that.
I know, I do. It is kind of sad, though, and I hate to say it, like, when this is what, I mean, it's been a week or so since your last podcast, and you haven't really seen much. Now, that's not a comment on you so much as, like, what's out there, because there really isn't that much out there.
No.
I do want to get Netflix Instant. In fact, I think there's
you can watch Sugar Hill.
A component for Wii now, a thing that we can just, like, we don't need the, what do you call that, the HDMI, or, no, not the HDMI, you just plug it right into your Wii, because the Wii already is connected via Wi-Fi.
To the Ethernet?
To the Internet. So you don't need an Ethernet. That's what
I'm
looking for. That's nerd speak
for
all you non-nerds out there.
What non-nerds are listening to F This Movie? Let's be realistic.
I don't know.
Tonight
is a very special night.
Yeah, because tonight is your night, bro.
we're effing twins.
That's right. I get the hot one. One of our very favorite F This Movie listeners, Jennifer, a frequent commenter on fthismovie.blogspot.com.
We love her.
We do. She requested a movie called Funny People.
Oh,
the 2009 people. Judd Apatow production starring Adam Sandler and Seth Rogen.
Then why did you tell me to watch Event Horizon? Because that's all I've been watching for the last 3 days.
over and over again. I like the scene where Lawrence Fishburne's daughter does porn.
Oh, there's a Matrix joke here somewhere.
we're effing Funny People.
Okay.
Funny People came out last summer and was, of course, ridiculously hyped for a lot of reasons. One, because it was the new Judd Apatow movie, and he was 2 for 2 in movies he directed, he had done 40-Year-Old Virgin and Knocked Up, and they were both
huge, successes.
Wildly successful, both financially and just people loved them. He had produced a bunch of movies that were very popular, so he was sort of the golden boy, and this was his third movie. It also starred Adam Sandler, who, of course, makes over $100 million every time at bat. So these two powerhouses were teaming up for a movie about stand-up comedy, sort of, and I don't know, it's ambitious. So it was highly anticipated. It came out. It was very, very divisive, and I'm guessing we're going to spend the next 45 minutes talking about why that is. It was a commercial disappointment. Jesus. Not an out-and-out bomb, I don't think, but certainly a disappointment.
No, I right before I came over here, actually, I read up on just the numbers, and yeah. I think it cost, they said it cost $75 million to make.
Makes sense.
Which is a very expensive comedy.
Yeah, right.
And there's no special
a movie
effects.
About people talking.
There's nothing.
Cost $75
It takes place
million.
In Los Angeles in right. current day. There's a couple scenes that
using
take place.
Using his own family as the cast.
Right. It's all like people playing themselves. Right. It's not like, you know.
Right.
And I think even the scenes shot in San Francisco, the scenes in San Francisco were probably still shot in Los Angeles, because why would you go to San Francisco for that? So what are the expenses? I just assume it's his cost and Apatow's,
sure.
Apatow's cost.
Yeah.
So it cost $75 million. It made just over $8 million in its first day. I want to say maybe around 20 its first weekend.
Okay.
Which is like,
which was already a disappointment.
Yeah.
The weekend it came out, it was already like, I don't know about
Let's
funny
Let's be honest,
people.
Though. And I just want to, you know, for the, because we're in Chicago, obviously, and we're yeah. like the city that works, and we're middle class America. We're middle America. We're the real America.
That's right.
$20 million is a lot of money. But
yeah.
if we want to jump, take the leap, the jump to conclusions, Matt, to all the way to
if
Hollywood.
If I give you $75 million
yes.
and you give me $20 million back.
You would punch me square in the neck.
Yeah, I'm unhappy with
and
that
I don't want my
transaction.
Neck
no.
But let's get $20 million is a lot of money.
Sure.
I think overall, after all worldwide crap, it totaled $71 million. So it just
okay.
it didn't make money.
Right.
What's the rule of thumb? I think JB would know more about this.
They used to say you had to triple your production cost in order to be profitable.
I'm not sure if that's the case anymore.
I don't know that it is, but
because it seems like nothing is doing
that.
They're
spending so much on marketing now.
Right.
That I know it's, you know, but, you know, now there's so many other factors to consider, including even DVD revenue is a new way of making money that
right.
they didn't used to have.
Well,
so.
To your point earlier when you said I want to say Apatow all the time.
Because that's right.
Apatow?
Apatow.
Appetite.
Appetite.
Judd Apatow. I've got a Judd Apatow for this movie.
You have an appetite for Doug Struction.
Thank you. This is quite a spaghetti incident. okay, you mentioned earlier that he made 40-Year-Old Virgin.
Yes.
And Knocked Up.
Yes.
And those movies, as you said, were incredibly successful. A lot of that success, to your point, was, I think, because of the DVD sales and rentals and all those types
yeah,
of things.
Yeah,
because
probably.
It is, I mean, I know I saw... I think I saw 40-Year-Old Virgin for the first time on DVD, but I did see Knocked Up in the theater. And by the way, I'm not a huge Knocked Up fan. We can talk about that a little more, too, if you want. But I do like 40-Year-Old Virgin a lot. Repeat viewings, I think, has made it better, and it's grown on me a lot more, too. But it's got to be because it's I don't want to say cult movies, but they definitely have this cachet where it kind of like lends itself to being bought on DVD. It's an
yeah,
easy present at
right,
Christmas.
Right. People rewatch it a lot.
Yeah.
People are quoting it to each other. And
well, I always think about
movie.
I think about DVD collections, and I know this is something you and I have talked about a lot when you collect DVDs or Blu-rays now. And I think when I first started collecting DVDs, I got a job after college and I bought all these DVDs. And I bought everything. I bought the stuff I watch over and over again. I bought
right.
the
Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
I bought Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. It's like, I'm never watching that. I'm never watching, even though Taxi Driver is a great movie, and I do actually watch it more than Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, I don't watch it as much as...
Sugar and Spice.
Sugar and Spice. Let's be honest. Sugar and Spice should have won the Oscar in 19... Wait, that's not... That's Raging Bull. I was going to make a Raging Bull Ordinary People joke because I want to be 4 for 4 on all podcasts or whatever making that joke. Anyway, so the point is that, DVD sales and stuff are a huge contributor to why those previous two movies also were even more successful. And then it built and built and built in word of mouth. And so why wasn't Funny People more successful?
There's probably a number of reasons. I think chief among them is that it's not really an Adam Sandler comedy the way that other Adam Sandler movies are. Adam Sandler makes,
like, grown-ups.
At least a movie a year, right? And most of them are shit because they're grown-ups and they're movies he makes with his friends and they're funny to no one and they're lazy and they're terrible.
I disagree, by the way. They're funny to
Adam Sandler and his friends.
And probably, I don't know, just some dope in high school right now. Right, that right.
No one I want to know. They're not funny to anyone I want to know.
That's a better way to
put it. After a certain point. His first few movies were funny.
I don't want to chastise the dopes in high school. It's just, I think you put it better.
Yeah.
No one you want to know.
But then every once in a while, he makes a movie that isn't an Adam Sandler movie.
Right.
And it's something like Punch Drunk Love or Spanglish or Funny People. The exception to the rule is Rain Over Me, which... is a non-Adam Sandler movie, but is also terrible. But the other movies are good. And Funny People isn't a typical Adam Sandler movie, and I think people went into it thinking, it's the guy who did Knocked Up and 40-Year-Old Virgin. Right. It's Adam Sandler. This movie's going to be hilarious.
It's also called Funny People.
Yeah, right. So you could see where they might get that impression. But it's not all that interested in being funny all the time. There are definitely funny things in it, and what I like about Judd Apatow's movies is that they rely on people saying funny things more than setting up exaggerated comic set pieces and like wacky bits of business where, right. Oh my gosh, the someone roof trips is and on falls fire, right?
And lands face first into a pie or a cake or something.
Exactly, exactly. Right. They're more about people talking and making each other laugh and just being funny, and I've always liked that. And so there's a lot of that in Funny People, but there's a lot of really dark, nasty stuff in this movie too, and I think that turned a lot of people off. Another problem that I think people had with the movie is that it is very split. For about an hour and a half, it's a 2.5-hour movie. There's another issue that I think people have. But for about an hour and a half, it's this movie about Adam Sandler finding out that he has a terminal disease and trying to... Sort of make amends in his life. I mean, not exactly, but come to terms with.
No, I think that he absolutely tries to make amends. He's like calling his parents over and his sister, right. And is like, you know.
Right. And then, you know, spoilers for Funny People. If you haven't seen Funny People, I apologize. If you haven't seen Funny People, go watch Funny People. Because
why the F are you listening to this podcast?
Well, yeah, but sometimes people do. You know, maybe people listen to it wondering, like, if we're going to give a recommendation. So here's the recommendation. See Funny People. There's a very strong chance that you will not like it. But I think it's a movie that people should see because I think it inspires a reaction in a way that a lot of movies don't.
Right.
Particularly movies with Adam Sandler in them. They don't require you to process how you feel about them. And Funny People... really, really does. You really have to sit and think about how do I feel about this movie.
I think that's a qualified recommendation, and I agree with it. But I also think that I really like the movie. I think the first time I saw it, I had low expectations. I think because I saw it also after. This is me. I feel like such a non-movie person because I should see everything in the theater, and sometimes I don't because I'm busy or life gets in the way.
Oh, life happens.
Life happens.
That's what I say. But I see bummer stuff. Sticker. I look at my cat poster and I say, hang in there, you know?
I see stuff on DVD a lot, or I see stuff on HBO or DVR or whatever, and or I borrowed stuff from you oftentimes. And I saw it, and I think that I remember it being like, wow, this didn't perform very well. People were very divided on this, and I watched it, and I really responded well to it. I really, really liked it. I thought it was just even though, like, as you said, all these points are valid, it's two separate movies.
Right.
It's the first half is an hour and a half, and the second half is an hour, and they're very unrelated, but I mean, obviously it's the same character, but they're just like totally different feels and stuff, but I just think it works. I really, really respond to it. So yes, you should definitely go see it. And if you're listening to this podcast and you haven't seen it, I will not ruin the ending to Cyrus. I think Cyrus's ending has been ruined in other podcasts, so go listen to those if you'd like to.
Yeah, I definitely think people should see it. And I like the movie too, although it's now over a year later. I've seen it probably 3 or 4 times. I still have not come to terms with really how I feel about the movie.
Really?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
I would say overall I like it, but I have such reservations about it. And I think it's a fascinating movie, and I love studying it more than I love like watching it and enjoying it. I have the same
reaction.
That's
really interesting.
You can't really compare these two movies, but Rob Zombie's Halloween is another movie. The night I saw Rob Zombie's Halloween, I could not sleep. I was up all night. Not because Rob Zombie's Halloween scared me, because it's not a fucking scary
movie.
You
are a pussy.
It's just he put on a mask and he hurt those people. I couldn't sleep because I was laying awake trying to understand.
Why would Mike Myers do that? I loved him in Austin Powers.
He's the love guru.
What? He should not hate. He preaches love.
He's the cat in the hat.
Sorry. That joke was worth interrupting you for.
I was up all night trying to understand what Rob Zombie was trying to accomplish, because there's another movie where, like, for over an hour, it's this crazy movie about Michael Myers as a kid, and everyone's dirty and swearing, and it looks like a Rob Zombie movie, and it's like this fucked up backstory because he has to show how evil began. And then all of a sudden, it turns into practically a shot-for-shot remake of Halloween, and I'm trying to understand what was it that he was after. And I was up all night thinking about it, and I still haven't come to terms with it. But again, that's a movie I'll put on because I want to understand, and I try and study it. Funny People is kind of like that. If I had to compare Funny People to a movie, it's Rob Zombie's Halloween.
Not H2O, but Rob Zombie's Halloween.
Not H2O. Or The Love Guru.
The Love Guru. I kind of have a different reaction to it. I actually can sit down. It's not on HBO so much anymore, but it was on HBO maybe the last 6 months in heavy rotation. Mm-hmm. And I found myself flipping through the channels. I get home from work and I turn on the TV, and invariably I go to the HBO block on my satellite.
To see if Real Sex is on.
To see if Real Sex is on, or Taxicab Confessions.
Cat House.
But I would stumble across Funny People, and it would always be at different points. And I turn it on, and my wife would always, she's the type that can't rewatch, or not, I shouldn't say can't rewatch stuff, but doesn't like to rewatch stuff. And I'm the type, I love to rewatch movies, especially if they're movies that make me feel a certain way.
Right.
I can watch like Lost in Translation or Sideways. I mean, I just put these movies on. Those are recent movies, but I've probably seen them 5 or 6 times because I feel a certain way and I want to watch it. So Funny People, actually, I had a similar thing, and it was like very convenient, obviously, too, that just I'm flipping through the channels and there it is. And I put it on, and invariably she would just be like, this is on again. And it was like, I'd be watching it. And I find myself wanting to, I think about it a lot, and mm-hmm. I just like you do, but probably not to the depths that you do, but I want to watch it, and I really do enjoy it. I enjoy so much of, and this is probably where you and I differ, because I know we talked about this after the first time I saw it, mm-hmm. where my reaction to it was, and I want to get your reaction to it, because I think that this is how we talked about it on the phone. When I saw the first half of the movie, it's more about Seth Rogen, his character, and not more about him, but it really is focused on him becoming Adam Sandler, George's assistant.
Right.
And this kind of rise of his to not success necessarily, but a different lifestyle, riding in private jets, mm-hmm. and performing after James Taylor in big crowds and stuff. And I found it exciting, despite the fact that at the same time, the other plot, which is, I guess, the main plot, was that Adam Sandler's character, and this is a spoiler, is very sick. Although I think that was well known in the
trailers. They gave that away in the trailers.
Which is maybe their mistake, too.
Yeah, right.
If they want to make money, although they should, because honesty is the best policy.
Yeah, you had said that on the phone, that you like the movie and you were enjoying watching it because you love that it's about like the whole rise of Seth Rogen and like this exciting lifestyle that he's now living. And I had commented at the time, and I'll say it again for the purpose of this podcast, since we foolishly did not record that phone conversation.
We should start doing that. And then turn that into a book.
To me, the whole first half of the movie is entirely about Adam Sandler dying. That it's about a man who's going to die. And I thought it was just an interesting, it's a little glimpse into perhaps our worldview.
Where I'm like obsessed with the, oh my God, this rise. Right. Like, there's one scene in particular where they go on this private jet.
Your glass is half full of opportunity. My glass is half full of a rare form of leukemia.
There's a scene where they walk to a private jet, and it's Seth Rogen is so excited. He actually, I think he does a great job in the movie. He's
just sort of wide-eyed and
right. But he also does a great job, and I'll just jump ahead to the end where I think he's such a natural.
Where he becomes a cold-blooded killer.
Right. Well, he becomes the assassin that we all want him to be. But he does a great job of just his laughs seem genuine. His emotions seem very real without effort. And I know that's a lot of like some actors like Will Smith, for example, who does have some range, but I think the reason people like Will Smith is just because he's so enjoyable and so fun to watch as Will Smith, more so than Muhammad Ali.
Right.
So Seth Rogen, I think, has some of that kind of like effortless charm, and I just enjoyed watching him like just this wide-eyed amazement. But you're right, because maybe that's just me kind of like looking at the bright side of things, because there is this whole plot of like he's going to die.
Right.
But my thinking too, and maybe I'm just being a pragmatist, is that I'm thinking, well, we're 50 minutes into the movie, mm-hmm. and he's going to die. and it seems like he's going to die soon. So the movie has another 2 hours to go or whatever. I don't know if that, maybe I'm just thinking is going to get better. Right. I'm just hoping for the best. So right. I'm not like necessarily so hamstrung on that. And that's also what's kind of made me want to rewatch it again, because I'm able to enjoy that more knowing that right. he gets better.
Right, right, right.
That makes
right.
sense. Oh, by the way, he gets better.
Oh, spoiler. Yeah, he gets better.
And Cyrus hangs himself.
One of the things, and you talking about Seth Rogen being sort of this, he's wide-eyed and excited to be hanging out with George, the Adam Sandler character, who is a big movie star in shitty comedies. One of the things that is so fascinating to me about the movie, and again, one of the reasons I think people should see it, I think a lot of people didn't like it, and I can't tell you you're wrong for not liking it, because there's all sorts of reasons, ooh, unless ooh. You're like,
can I?
You can, absolutely. Okay, you're
fudging wrong.
If you went into it saying, like, I want this to be like You Don't Mess with Zohan, and then you're like, this wasn't like You Don't Mess with the Zohan, then go fuck yourself, because you are wrong to not like it.
How come little Nikki didn't make me laugh?
But there's plenty of reasons to not like the movie, and if you don't like it, okay. But I think you have to at least sort of respect and admire the movie, because it is insanely ambitious and personal and, yes, self-indulgent. But for a guy, for Judd Apatow, who was really at the top of his game, you know, this is the movie you only get to make once. This is the movie that he cashed in all right. of his goodwill to make. And it was a gamble and it didn't really pay off. And he's kind of disappeared since then. We haven't seen or heard much from him. It used to be there was like a Judd Apatow production coming out once a month. He's retreated a little bit, perhaps the stung by the failure of Funny People.
Maybe.
But it is a really personal movie, and for a comedy like this to come out of a major studio starring Adam Sandler, I mean, there's so much to like yeah. and appreciate about this movie. And one of the things that fascinates me about it is that it's so insanely personal and self-indulgent. The degree to which it sort of reflects back reality, that it plays all these games with between movie world and the real world, where, you know, Seth Rogen walking around being so excited to be hanging out with Adam Sandler's character sort of reflects their real lives. That Seth Rogen was a kid watching Adam Sandler movies, worshiping Adam Sandler, and now he's a professional actor acting in a movie opposite Adam Sandler.
Right.
Adam Sandler's character in the movie.
And Seth Rogen actually co-wrote, I think, too, didn't he?
No, he was a producer, but Apatow wrote it by himself. That's what I meant.
He co-produced it. Whatever.
Sandler's character in the movie is
You'd think that after a while I'd get like annoyed by being shot down by Patrick so much. I don't. No. I find it educational.
His character is this insanely popular movie star who makes terrible high-concept comedies, like one where he gets turned into a baby or one where he's a merman.
Merman.
Right. And they're terrible. Merman. But again, you have to appreciate the extent to which this movie is fucking savage about Adam Sandler's filmography. Because right. These movies are so not far off from shit like Click and Little Nicky and like terrible high concept comedies that Adam Sandler makes. Right. So his willingness to fuck with his own image, Apatow's willingness to sort of make fun of his cinematic output. Apatow and Sandler were college roommates. And so the movie opens with home video footage of Adam Sandler making prank calls, and it's just real footage that Judd Apatow shot right. when they were kids.
And it's really just nothing. I mean, he's shooting this for his own use. It's not, right. they're not making right. prank calls to record them and sell them. They're right. just making prank
but
phone
20
calls.
Years later, he puts it in a $70 million movie
right.
because he's one of the most successful directors in Hollywood right. working with one of the most successful actors in Hollywood.
And by the way, I don't care. I know those prank calls are kind of silly and juvenile, but man, I when you watch it is funny.
Right. And they there's Ben really... Stiller and Janine Garofalo in right. the shot. It's crazy. And none of them were anybody at the time, right. you know?
But I think just to touch upon what you said before too, like you were talking about if people don't like this movie because they're expecting Click,
or right.
they're expecting those high concept. I had said before Big Daddy. Big Daddy's obviously not a high concept movie, right. like in the vein of Click or
right.
Little Nicky and these weird, you know. But people are. I mean, that's why they are. We're expecting the Merman,
right?
And I just think that you said it obviously so much better. But like even in the movie, there's scenes in which people want him to do the voices and
right.
want that. And
right.
It's savage towards the fans almost
right.
too. And it's
right.
And I think that again,
fuck
the whole,
you for liking this.
Right.
Yeah.
The whole thing, it seems to me so, like you said before, so ambitious. And he obviously made this at the peak of his fame or his success, and it didn't do well, but damn, it's so interesting to watch. And
yeah.
just really, and for me, I think more enjoyable. I could just sit back and kind of not really think about all the nuts and bolts and really just enjoy it just on the pure ride scale right. of it too. But I don't know if you want you were finished with the one thought. I just want to jump ahead to the second half of the movie, which yeah. I think a lot of people have more issues with. I think
I would agree with that.
If the first half of the movie were by itself, I think it would have been, I don't know if you can really quantify it as more successful, less successful, but I think that some people would think that, well, it's a more, you know, framed in, you right. know,
I think, piece. I honestly think it, the movie might work better, but I think it would be a much less interesting movie. I don't know that we would be talking about it.
You might be right. The second half of the movie, George, Adam Sandler's character, he gets healthy, and he is obsessed with reconnecting with his previous squeeze,
right,
played by Judd Apatow's wife.
Exactly. There's Leslie another Mann. Thing. Again, right. He casts his own wife and his own kids.
Right.
In a subplot, right, about their family being ripped apart by Adam Sandler. I mean, it's fascinating.
And they also show Leslie Mann's, like, reel, right. basically, her commercials.
And
her...
Apatow's daughter actually singing Memory from her school production. Again, they incorporate it into the right. movie. And you could call that self-indulgent, and it is. But I am fascinated by that, the willingness to which... he will pillage his own life to make a movie, I think right. is really interesting.
Art reflecting life?
Yes.
Reflecting art.
It's insanely, insanely personal, and you have to appreciate that, I think.
So people obviously had issues with the second half, and the second half does definitely have a very different vibe than the first half. It's much smaller in scale. It's more about these two people with the supporting cast of Seth Rogen right. and her husband, played by Eric Bana
yeah.
who does a great job.
He's hilarious.
And it's pretty much their reconciliation, conflict, what is going to happen with their future because she's married and has kids, but they're going through some troubles. And it just, I found that actually to be very interesting as well. And like you said, almost not more than the first half, but together taken as two parts
right.
put together. I always have an issue with people sometimes too, especially this movie, which I think personally, and it's obviously a subjective opinion of mine, I think this movie works. I think that it's two dissimilar things that are come together and make a package that has a story to tell.
Mm-hmm.
But I always get pissed off by people when they always kind of say, well, you know, it doesn't jive with the first half, and I just right. want it to be the first half. It's like, well, I think that both parts are great by themselves, I guess, right. but I don't want to watch them by themselves. I want to watch them together as one package.
I've never quite been able to reconcile the two halves. I mean, I think the movie overall
so
works
you're
as a whole.
Complaining about.
Exactly. I'm that dick. But I don't feel like either half is informed enough by the other.
Mm.
That's my issue. It's not that I think he needed to get rid of one altogether, but it's just I don't think that the first half has enough to do with the second or vice versa.
I completely disagree. I'm not trying to be contrarian.
Sure.
The
cops are here to arrest
the
you.
The cops are here to arrest me, by the way. I'm just repeating what you say. Not to be contrary, but I think that the second half couldn't exist without the first half.
Well, right, because he essentially comes back from the dead and decides he wants to... it's his new lease on life, and
right.
that this is the thing that's going to make him happy. I agree with that.
I find it so interesting, too, and while you're thinking of that, I think it's interesting that obviously when he's dying, when
mm-hmm.
he's like sick and they're taking blood and he feels horrible, he's taking this medication, he's raging. And by the way, he plays a dick really, really well.
He's great in the movie.
Yeah.
Really great.
And then he reconciles with his family, like his parents, his sister, who he never sees. I don't know if that's I hope that's not autobiographical because
I don't think that
would be horrible because right. it just is a horrible thing to not be close to those people. And then he's trying to like make good and trying to like live his life. And, you know, he obviously becomes obsessed with reconciling with Leslie Mann's character. I find that so interesting that once he does get healthy, how quickly he reverts back to old
right,
habits and
right.
just becomes a dick again,
right.
which ultimately leads to, again, the spoiler for the end of the movie, him pushing away Ira, which is Seth Rogen's character, and basically Ira is the voice of reason throughout the entire second half, just
right.
saying, like, what are you doing? She's got kids. Don't, like, F with them. I'm seeing a shrill, kind of mean-spirited person, and you're seeing what you want to see through these, you know, rose glasses or whatever the dumb cliched
right,
expression
right.
is. And eventually Adam Sandler, who just is a very tormented, conflicted person who obviously is not happy and never will be without help, it
right.
seems to
yeah,
me,
right.
like pushes
right.
his best friend away, basically.
Right.
And at the end, I just love also how it ends in that they are not reconciled and nothing, it doesn't end on this great happy note, but they, at least their friendship is, which, you know, could be argued as
there's hope.
There's hope, yeah. Right.
I mean, the second half is definitely interesting, and I think a good and sort of realistic portrayal of that experience of reconnecting with an ex and thinking that it was a mistake to have broken up and, right. and to think that if only I could get back to that, my life would be different. It would be better. And a lot of times that is not the correct thing to think. And Adam Sandler has that really interesting line where he tells her, you know, you loved me before anybody loved me. And that's very telling, I think, of what it is that he's looking for, because it's very obvious that he sort of resents, as much as he enjoys his success and is a product of all of his money and opportunity and has just crazy sex with whoever he wants and, you know, is super just spoiled and kind of a dick, you get the feeling that he kind of resents his success. And here's this character who doesn't necessarily want him for that, and so he romanticizes that. And she definitely sees it as sort of a way out of her life. Not that she, I don't necessarily get the feeling that she resents, you know, her husband and her kids, but she wanted to be an actress and never did, and feels like she never really got a shot. Exactly. And so Adam Sandler is sort of the way back into that. And so they both are sort of using each other.
Oh yeah.
And I think all that is really smart. I would have liked to have seen it woven throughout the movie better.
Okay.
That's maybe my issue when I say, like, the two halves don't inform each other and all that, is that I wish that some of those ideas had been woven throughout the movie instead of just all tacked on to the hour at the end.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that would be outstanding. Like, that could have been a great movie, but it's just a good one and an interesting one.
Oh, yeah. I want to talk about briefly the performances, some of the performances.
Yeah.
One of the performances, and I don't want to say it's underrated because it's not. If you see it, it's great. But Jason Schwartzman's character, he is probably, like, of all the people in the movie, you've got Adam Sandler, you've got Seth Rogen, you've got the other guy.
Jonah Hill.
They're all, I know Seth Rogen's not a comedian or comic per se, but, like, they're all very funny people.
Right.
And Jason Schwartzman is, like, in theory, the only one who's kind of comes from the Coppola pedigree, and he's an actor. He is hilarious in this movie. Yeah. Everything he does, everything he says is, like, pitch perfect. Yeah. And I really...
He's one of the best people, I think, working at playing a douchebag.
Yeah.
Like, he does it so... Scott Pilgrim, he did it again. I mean, he's so good at it.
I wouldn't have imagined when I saw... I love Rushmore, but I wouldn't have imagined that he would evolve into this character where he's just, like, you know, like, you can hire him to be your comedy.
Right.
And I think the whole... Also, the subplot, which is totally separate. I don't think it has anything to do with Judd Apatow's past or Adam Sandler's past, but the whole sub thing of his job as the teacher on Yo Teach,
right?
The sitcom, and it's so perfect and so great.
That is absolutely autobiographical.
Oh, is it really?
Because when Judd Apatow was,
I thought I would have had to think that no way they're going to work on a sitcom like that
in college, just out of college. Him and I think a guy named Alan Covert, who you know from all the Adam Sandler movies.
Okay.
Oh,
Alan Covert.
He's the star. He's the
Jimbo Covert from the Bears, 85 Bears.
He's the star of Grandma's Boy. I don't know if you've seen Grandma's Boy.
No.
It's an underrated comedy, by the way. I swear to God. I can't think of one of Alan Covert's roles in... Okay, he's like the limo driver in Wedding Singer. He's that guy, and he shows up in a lot of the Sandler movies. Apatow and Alan Covert were rooming with, or living with, Rob Stone, who played the eldest son on Mr. Belvedere.
Okay.
And Rob Stone would leave his Mr. Belvedere checks laying around for people to see. So Jason Schwartzman is playing a variation on Rob Stone of Mr. Belvedere. But again, it's, you know, the movie is so interested in examining all these different kinds of comedy,
mm-hmm.
which it doesn't get a lot of credit for, whether it's stand-up comedy or movie comedy with the Sandler shit or what passes for TV comedy, which is this awful Yo Teach. And it's a great, great spot on.
Oh, there's a scene in which the guy goes, Yo Teach, and he turns around and the kid goes, this thug goes, thanks. And then Jason Schwartzman goes, yo. Or no, he goes, word.
Word, yeah.
Sorry.
William Shakespeare. It's great. It's really funny.
It's so perfect and so great. And again, it's the movie has this scope. And it's like you said before, and we're just repeating ourselves now, it's a very ambitious, very huge. The arc of the movie is so big. It reminds me of like a James L. Brooks type movie. And you mentioned Spanglish earlier
yeah.
With Adam Sandler. And I can't name as many as you can, but I think of As Good As It Gets and right. other James L. Brooks movies. And it just, they always feel like they're not, you can't qualify them. And I think that's probably why people have an issue with them. Maybe people going in expecting to see Merman, who saw Funny People,
right.
can't quite come to grips with, like, is this a drama? It's called Funny People. It's right. not funny. It's right. dramatic. It's just, because it's not, I mean, I think it is very funny. And I constantly laugh. I think about lines all the time in my head and I laugh. But it definitely has this kind of arc where you don't know necessarily where it's going. And I think that there's not enough of that in anything these days, TV, movies. I mean, everything is so predictable. And, right. and likewise, and this has nothing to do with Funny People, I'm so sick of watching trailers or previews in the movies, and you see the whole movie.
Right.
I'm just going to mention Charlie St. Cloud, because why wouldn't I mention Charlie St. Cloud on a podcast about Funny People? I have no desire to see it, although I do think Zac Efron is dreamy. You see the whole movie in the trailer. I mean, right. literally, like, beat by beat. It's right. like the whatever screenwriting rules of, like, at this point this right. has to happen. It's like right. just a compressed mini version of that.
And they even get the beat where you play catch with your dead brother. That's that tired cliche that's in every movie.
But I think that it's refreshing to see this movie. Like, when I first saw it, I didn't know where it was going. I think that also, you know, just reinforces my reaction to it when I first saw it. I really just enjoyed it.
I agree, and I would always, I've said this before, but I would always rather see a movie that tries to do too much and comes up short
sure.
than a movie that has no ambition, like Grown Ups or almost right. any other Adam Sandler comedy.
Well, it's two things. One is, I'll compare it to a band. It's always more fun to watch a band who is talented, but they're playing songs maybe a step above where right. their talent is, because right. they're at the edge of their talent. And it's right. like, it's so interesting because they're evolving and growing.
Right.
And I'll also make a reference to you. You have this fascination with movies that are ambitious, that are failures also.
Right.
And I think that is, I mean, you have mentioned, I can only think of one off the top of my head, but Southland Tales
right.
is a movie that you can't recommend and you don't think people should necessarily see it, but right. you have this interest in it, and I don't want to speak for you, but you have this interest in it that is, like, it's ambitious, it is just, it's crazy.
Right.
It is.
Right. Obviously, the best case scenario is a movie that's totally ambitious and succeeds, something like Inception.
Right.
Or a movie that knows exactly what it is and executes expertly, you know,
right.
Like a Die Hard. So for people to not like Funny People because it's too ambitious, I understand. If a movie's ambitious and comes up short, then yeah, you can't necessarily call it a success, but wouldn't you rather see a movie that's ambitious?
Right.
Going back to something you said about James L. Brooks, that was something that I thought too when I saw Funny People. It really felt like a James L. Brooks movie to me, because his movies are always sort of about messy emotions and people who are funny, but the movies are sometimes dramas, and they're people that can be unlikable and say nasty things, but we still ultimately like them, or at least want to understand them. And James L. Brooks is really good at that. And I was thinking about that in preparation for this podcast.
You know what I was thinking about in preparation for the podcast?
What's that?
Pizza.
Oh, pizza is delicious. here's the difference, I think. Because actually, this isn't exactly like a James L. Brooks movie. It is in some ways.
But just feels like it.
James L. Brooks comes from TV. Like, and his movies are often kind of sitcom-y. I like the movie As Good As It Gets, but, like, that movie is very sitcom-y.
And that movie does not hold up.
No.
You watch it. I mean, first of all, Helen Hunt's in it, so
right.
that's going to strike right away. But I watched it maybe 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And I remember when I first saw it, I was like, wow, that's just, again, it's that reaction, like, that's
right.
a smart.
Right.
I don't know how I feel about that. It wasn't
right.
perfect, but it's like,
right.
and you watch it recently, and again, I'm just kind of maybe reacting now more so to how it's aged, how the comedic beats, they're like, there's pauses for, not laughter, but there's just like weird beats, and you know.
Right.
It's,
and the Jack Nicholson character in that movie is a curmudgeon, and he's a grouch, and he says outrageous, offensive things, but we don't mind because A, he's Jack Nicholson, and so he's great at doing that,
right?
And B, because he's mentally ill or something, and he's still lovable even though he's a dick, right? And that's James L. Brooks coming from sitcoms. Judd Apatow comes from comedy, and comedians are fucking dark.
Yeah.
And this movie is fucking dark because Adam Sandler is, no attempt is made to make his character lovable.
Right.
A lovable grouch. Just misunderstood. He is a selfish, immature asshole.
Right.
For pretty much the whole movie. And
yeah.
that's the thing, you know, I don't think that's that part is not autobiographical, because everything I know about Adam Sandler is that he's just like super fun-loving, casts all his friends, everything's a party.
Right, he's
a good guy. And
but I think you're right, though. Comics in general, I mean, from what you hear, are just the darkest.
Dark, dark shit. And there's a great moment in Funny People, possibly my favorite moment, because as much as the movie is about comedy, it isn't really about comedy. But every once in a while, it gives you this great insight into comedy. Adam Sandler has this party after he finds out he's going to be okay. It's at a bar, and he gets introduced to a girl played by Maggie Siff from Mad Men and Sons of Anarchy.
And you love Sons of Anarchy.
I love both of those shows, and everybody should watch them.
But they're not movies.
No, they're not.
This AMC TV show.
He gets introduced to this girl, and she says something about J-Date, and he says, "What's that?" And she says, "Well, it's a, you know,
a dating site for Jews.
And he says, "Oh, a list of Jewish people. I didn't think Jewish people liked lists." And it's a dark joke about the fucking Holocaust. But he's a comedian, and of course that's where his brain goes.
Right.
But he's talking to a normal person who isn't a comedian, and she doesn't understand why he would make that joke. And she is turned off instantly, and their conversation ends, and she thinks he's just an asshole.
Right.
And I think that's such a true moment about how, you know, certain kinds of comedians, at least, are unable to relate to non-comedians.
Yeah.
Because so much of the movie is just comedians relating to each other, and it's fine, and they speak a language, and they all get it. But then he ventures out and tries to talk to a normal human, and he can't do it.
Right, right, right.
And I thought that was so smart, and I wish the movie had a little bit more of that, but whatever. Because, unfortunately, there's a lot of celebrity cameos, people playing themselves, and Apatow tries to be...
There's a ton of that, yeah.
And he tries to be... But again, it's this weird thing of, like, the movie universe intermingling with the real universe. Right. So we have all these stars playing themselves, talking to Sandler, playing a movie character. And Judd Apatow tries to be really generous with all his celebrity cameos. So he tries to give them all a laugh. And so James Taylor gets like two or three laughs. He says, "Fuck Facebook." And he says, "Do you ever get tired of talking about your dick?" Oh, that's funny because it's James Taylor. And he said a funny...
He's saying the dick word.
Right. But it gets... old, I think.
Oh, yeah. I've seen the movie now maybe, like, you know, in bits and pieces, but right. I always seem to come across this same scene.
Is it Eminem in the restaurant?
No.
Oh.
Although, actually, I don't mind that scene that much.
It just goes on so long.
Yeah, it's... yeah.
And again, we're supposed to laugh just because it's Eminem getting worked up about Ray Romano, and it's like, that in and of itself isn't a funny enough idea for me to be totally sold. But
it's anyway. It's this montage with Andy Dick and Charles Fleischer.
Yeesh, the corpse of Charles Fleischer.
I feel bad. I fast forward it now because I've seen it once and I remember seeing it. I'm like, I don't know what he's doing.
Right.
I mean, I know what he's doing, but it's like, it's not funny.
He's like, please give me my medication.
By the way, I looked at IMDb. Is there a Roger Rabbit 2 coming out in 2012?
No, it's not official.
Is that just IMDb, like, if there's ever talks about things?
There was like a story that Zemeckis said, like, oh, maybe I wouldn't have to work with humans. And so IMDb puts
what lies beneath? Is that a driver's license?
It is. Yeah.
Thank you.
You did it.
I look for Patrick for validation. Look to Patrick for validation.
Validation.
Validation. This whole podcast is about validation. But Charles Fleischer is, I just couldn't, and you're right, it seems kind of self-serving.
Paul Reiser's not looking hot either.
No, it seems like an interesting group of characters. And I also, the one thing, this is a very minor critique of the movie, I don't like how they make Adam Sandler seem, it seems like it's written for a much older person. Like,
right.
Seth Rogen watched his movies when he was grown up. It's like, well, you're not that far apart in age. I know what he's saying, obviously,
right.
Whatever, but it's like, right. It's, Adam Sandler is still in the prime. He's not an old man. He's like in his, what is he, in his early 40s? Or
yeah, I would say so.
So it's just, it's, you know, but that's such a stupid minor thing. Another thing I want to talk about briefly is Aziz Ansari's character, Randy.
Yeah.
Which I have to say, to not talk about the movie at all, but talk about Aziz Ansari, that this character he made for the movie called Randy. I don't know if you want to explain Randy because you're much better explainer.
Randy is just, again, because the movie's exploring all these different sort of approaches to comedy, and Randy is the comedian that all comedians hate.
Yeah.
Because he's not particularly funny, but he says things with a lot of energy, and he has a certain style about him, and he gets a huge response from the audience. And if you're a true comedian who actually, you know, puts in time and effort to writing funny jokes, it's got to be frustrating to see this guy go out there and hop around on stage and swear and have people go fucking nuts.
It's a manic, high energy, high pitched, not funny. There's no punchlines. It's just like it's set up in such a way that where the punchline comes, there is no punchline, but you are, as an audience, you kind of think there should be.
It's not explicitly supposed to be Dane Cook, but that's very much what I took from it watching it was, oh, he's kind of representative of that kind of comedy.
Although, total side note, I was in California recently. And we were eating...
Tinseltown.
The Dream Factory. Eating dinner...
California Pizza Kitchen?
Across from...
In-N-Out Burger.
We were just at the Pizza Kitchen. They call it just the Pizza Kitchen.
Oh, okay. Chick-fil-A?
We were at Del Taco. El Pollo Loco. These are fast food places that don't exist in Chicago.
There was an El Pollo Loco. It closed.
Did it close?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was in Hanover Park or something?
Yeah, yeah.
Across the street was a Cull Stone Creamery, and I just couldn't, like, I was obsessed for the rest of the dinner, because, and that's another point, in the movie he makes a joke about Cold Stone Creamery, and it's not funny, but he says they have three sizes, like it, love it, gotta have it, and he's, you know,
jumping around
like a fool.
Right.
But it's interesting how there's nothing funny about that, but it sticks in your brain.
Right.
So when I'm in, you know, having lunch in California, weeks after having seen the movie, or recently, you know, like, I know it's on my mind, obviously, too, but I that's the only thing I could think of.
Right.
And it might also be because no one else has ever made a Cold Stone Creamery joke, so maybe I'm just...
You don't remember George Carlin's great routine?
The differences between Cold Stone Creamery and Baskin-Robbins?
Yeah.
Because at Baskin-Robbins, they give you 31 flavors. At Cold Stone Creamery... I can't... It's all about the cadence.
I'm impressed with how far you made it into that, though. That's awesome.
But Randy, okay, so the point I'm trying to make is that he did this character, Randy, and then if you've seen, and I'm sure some of you out there who listen are nerds like us, that you like comedy, and if you've seen some Aziz Ansari, by the way, you should check out comedians.about.com. If you've seen some Aziz Ansari, you know that as the closing of his act in the last like year and a half, he does his Randy character. And I think that when he first did it, he was doing it in preparation for the movie, to practice a bad set.
Right.
And now he's doing it, and I don't know if he's still doing it. I like Aziz Ansari.
I saw him this summer, and he did it.
I like him a lot. I think he's very funny. But people were cheering, and it was a weird blurring of the line between, what is this? Is this like a parody, or am I actually laughing at this?
No, it's become the thing that it was making fun of.
You're right, and it's very bizarre. It's a very bizarre kind of extension of what all... Because it's like this, such a joke that we're pointing at and laughing at, and all of a sudden now it's like, I'm going to do this character that everyone loves to hate.
Right, but now people... When I saw him this summer... Randy got a bigger reaction than Aziz Ansari.
Absolutely.
It got more cheers, and people were so excited when he was going to come out and do Randy.
I saw some special also, and it was like the audience went ballistic. They went crazy.
They love Randy.
And again, the jokes are, it's funny because it's such a production, and like strobe lights, and there's music and rap. Right. But then he comes out, and he tells jokes, and they're not funny.
And they're not funny. And he just spent 50 minutes telling you jokes that were much better, but apparently people are waiting for the stuff that's not funny.
Which just reflects also that this smart... I mean, I hate to say smart and stupid, but smarter audiences who, like, maybe respond to Aziz Ansari's unique brand of humor...
Right.
...are still, like, caught up in the current of what... It's just... It's a
But now Aziz Ansari is, like, this weird sellout because he has to feed this monster and do Randy, even though it has to kill him inside, I would think, because...
I don't know. Maybe he sleeps really well on top of all that money.
It was supposed to be making fun of bad comedy, and now
it's just bad comedy. Got him host of the MTV Movie Awards or whatever he was
hosting. Well, and it's fascinating that Randy is so popular, but Funny People really isn't. Like, it's not a movie that's beloved or even particularly popular.
Right, but this one thing that if you never knew Funny People, it's like this extension from Funny People was way more popular
than
this
movie.
This is
what broke out of the movie.
Right, this thing that we all are meant to hate.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting. Funny People. F! Funny People. I really, really like it. I think it's definitely worth seeing. I think that you should go out and go to Redbox right now. Go to Video Plus Emporium, Jennifer, if you will.
I think I like 40-Year-Old Virgin a lot. I even like Knocked Up, though I see problems with it.
Knocked Up doesn't have legs like 40-Year-Old Virgin has. I saw it in the theater and I was like, oh, that was funny.
Yeah.
And then I watch it. It's on E! A lot. And,
really?
Yeah.
Oh, because there's a whole E angle in it.
Yeah.
Angle works
I'm
for
sure.
E.
It doesn't really resonate with me. And again, I'm, you know, but you're a parent. There's nothing about it that's,
The summer I saw Knocked Up, it was the same summer.
But I'm a virgin, so that's why. The first one.
The summer, and I collect toys. The summer that Knocked Up came out was the same summer that Superbad came out. And the two movies were often being pitted against each other. And I really liked Knocked Up. And I liked Superbad, but didn't love it. I think I called it super decent. And subsequently, I've seen them both a few times on cable or on DVD. And now I think Knocked Up is flawed, but still entertaining at times. But I think Superbad is incredible. I think it's one of the funniest movies, one of the best comedies of the last 10 or 15 years.
Wow. I just bought it on Blu-ray.
I think it's really, really outstanding. So I like 40-Year-Old Virgin a lot. I like Knocked Up. I will say that I think Funny People is probably Judd Apatow's best movie, even though it's not as enjoyable as those other ones because they're just funny throughout. But they're smart and they, I think, are based in emotion, which is one of the things I like about Apatow's movies. But I think this is his most ambitious, obviously. It's definitely his most accomplished. He has not been much of a visual stylist in the past. The movies feel sort of slapped together through different takes of improv, and this movie doesn't at all. It's got great photography, I think.
Janusz Kaminski.
Yeah, Columbia College graduate.
Two quick things. One, I just want to clarify something, and I feel kind of awkward doing this. Uh-oh. Is that I said earlier that I'm a virgin, and I'm not a virgin. And people listening to this podcast, I'm sure you believe me that when I say I'm not a virgin.
He's not a virgin.
Specifically, but people we're sorry, gearing ladies, this podcast towards... Games. Oh. You should know I'm not a virgin.
That's right.
Number two, would you call this movie...
a dramedy.
No, would you call this... You know, would you compare it to a Chasing Amy? Meaning, like you said before, it's his most... it's his best movie. It's his most heartfelt movie. It's kind of like maybe not as enjoyable as a Clerks or a Mallrats, which are just more visceral and fun.
I guess. That this is the movie where he sort of lays it all out.
Right.
Yes, the only difference I think is in Chasing Amy, I think the style still suffers. And here I think this is a really polished movie just in terms of pure filmmaking. And Chasing Amy is not. It's very rough. And that's part of its aesthetic, which I like. But
I'm just trying to sound smart on tape.
You sound very smart. By the way, also sound a little bit like a virgin.
Why are we taping the podcast is my question.
I don't know.
This is weird. We should go to computers.
Just do it live? Oh.
On computers.
That means I need to get a computer. And you know, Tron. I don't want Tron to get me.
The new one? So yes, I'm not a virgin, and Chasing Amy is good.
Thanks, everyone. Wow, we really ended up in a different place than we started. What happened?
It's been quite a journey. All right, well, thank you very thanks for having me, Patrick. I always appreciate
it. It was my pleasure.
Being a part... albeit a very distant ancillary part of F This Movie, but I always appreciate being a foil to you and your insane knowledge of movies, and I mean that very sincerely.
I don't think you do.
I know. I'm being as...
You got mad because I said magazine.
No, I think it's a lesser person. I'm complimenting myself right now.
Okay.
Would be offended by being corrected so much. I take it as a learning experience.
Listen, this is going out for people to listen to.
No, I know. I'm the first person to admit I'm a dummy.
Would you rather somebody sit there at their desk at work, on the treadmill, on the train, heading right for your daughter's school, listening to F This Movie, saying, man, they keep getting shit wrong?
No, I would not, because I listen to radio shows like that, and it drives me effing crazy when they say, like, who's in that super group, Buffalo Springfield? They get the names wrong. And I'm like, McGowan!
Who is in that supergroup?
Neil Young, Stephen Stills, and some other guy. I don't know. It's not really a supergroup, I guess, but it's not like a Blind Faith. By the way, this is all totally
Buffalo
cuttable.
Springfield, who sings Son of a Preacher Man, right? Thanks for listening to F This Movie, Pulp Fiction.
Dusty Buffalo.
That's your stripper name.
It is. No, I in all seriousness, I think that you know so much about movies, and I'm not just saying this to further
go on.
To make the audience think that you're some sort of near genius, but I do like it because I love movies, and again, I say this all the time, I love movies, but I oftentimes get people's names wrong and I get facts wrong. And when
you say books instead of magazines,
I say books instead of magazines, right. Whatever. So
what's a dirty book though?
A dirty book would be
Nexus Sexus, Tropic of Cancer, Henry Miller. That's dirty, right?
Huck Finn.
Yeah, Huck Finn is a dirty book. Email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com or visit our site, fthismovie.blogspot.com. There's other stuff up there. There's wacky lists.
There's fan art.
There's fan art.
So, yes, if you're a fan and you'd like to draw what you think we look like, it might be possible.
Remember
to know
that Doug is very handsome. Sorry, ladies. He's engaged.
Remember that Patrick has a great personality. He knows a lot about movies. I don't know how that translates into a drawing about him or a caricature.
But just assume I don't see sunlight.
Sallow is not a word I use often. but no, there's lots of things on there. There's lists which are always really well written and really fun to read, for me at least. There's other things.
Links to things.
There's contests.
Yeah, we've never had an F This Movie contest. Should we have one?
I think we should.
Yeah.
Write in your ideas for contests.
That's a good contest. The person that comes up with the best contest wins.
Wins what?
The contest.
Wins a copy of...
Don't promise something I can't give.
No, I will give this. Right, wins a copy
this
of...
This is coming from Doug.
What should they win? Blazing Saddles 30th Anniversary Edition on DVD. No, scratch that. I want to keep that for myself. Sorry. Psych. Whoa. Psych podcast.
He taketh and he...
Wait. Giveth away.
Giveth away.
All right. The podcast has devolved into giggling. And that's not what you paid for. Wait, this is free.
Bye, everyone.